Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. We are not quite halfway through the Major League Baseball season, but the Milwaukee Brewers are hanging around the top spot in the National League Central Division, chasing their arch rivals, the Chicago Cubs.
Expectations were high for the Brewers this season, months after they came within a game of advancing to the World Series for the first time since 1982. Sean Ranft is our sports contributor, and he is here with us to talk about the Brewers and then another Milwaukee team that was thwarted just short of making it to its championship series. Welcome back, Sean. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me back again.
So let's start with baseball.
Okay.
We're into June, and the Brewers have not been a runaway, you know, a world beater this year. On the other hand, they haven't been awful.
No, they're hanging right in there. They recently overtook first for about 48 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
Before the Marlins came to town. We have to emphasize that.
As we're having this conversation, I think they're about to play the last of their games against the Marlins in this series.
And
so who knows how it will come out.
And they've lost the first two by a combined 24-3.
Which is not what you expect from either the Brewers or the Marlins.
No. You know, every once in a while you're going to get that fluke game and, you know, 16 to nothing game, and a team's going to score 11 runs in one inning, and there's nothing you can do about it. You burn the footage, you move on. And then it happens again the next day, and then you don't worry, though. They're still right there in the division. The Cardinals have been struggling a bit. The Cubs were struggling the last couple weeks, but they're picking it up now. And they just signed closer Craig Kimbrell. And I just want to, as an aside, say every team is dumb for not signing him earlier. And now
this is the guy, for people who are not familiar with Craig Kimbrell, he was the Red Sox closer for a few years. Before that, he was the lights out closer for the Atlanta Braves.
Yes, and he literally just won a World Series ring with the Red Sox last season. And he's still only in his early 30s.
Well, and so why were teams reluctant to jump on the Craig Kimbrell bandwagon when he was clearly the best closer who was on the market? There are a lot of teams who have been doing closer by committee this year.
Yeah, and obviously, at least with Kimbrell, he wanted a huge contract. He wanted 6 years and, you know, a little north of $100 million. And teams don't want to pay that for almost anybody right now. Teams are especially hesitant when it comes to relief pitchers because those can change on a yearly basis or injuries can happen. Look at the Brewers with Knebel. Jeffers was injured before the season started, and he's come back fine. Josh Hader has been a little more hittable this season, even though he just picked up the Reliever of the Month award. When he gets hit, it's a home run lately, and that wasn't happening last season. And the Brewers went out and kind of shored up some odd ends in the bullpen, but Craig Kimbrell was right there. That's a future Hall of Famer and currently still one of the best relievers in the game. And yeah, teams just didn't want to pay him that much money, and now the Cubs got him for 3 years at under $50 million. That's a sweet deal for one of the best closers of all time. And every team is dumb for A, not signing him earlier, and now B, letting the Cubs just swoop in and grab him.
And if you're a Brewers fan, that especially smarts.
Especially if you're a Brewers fan. And I saw a note yesterday, his career ERA against the rest of the Central Division is just over one. So, you know, it's going to be fun. Next few years is going to be fun when you have to come back against the Cubs, which is already tough to do. Their bullpen was the one weakness. When their lineup's healthy, they're great. But let's stop talking about the Cubs.
Let's talk about the Brewers.
Let's talk about the Brewers.
The Brewers did pick up somebody that everybody else had passed on, and they got kind of a bargain in the offseason, and he's kind of paid some dividends, Yasmani Grandal.
Yes. There is no such thing as a bad one-year deal. I know a few people were a little hesitant when it was for a little over $18 million. Like Kimbrell, Grandal was the best at his position this
he's
past
catcher.
Season. He's a catcher. But signing Grandal was a no-brainer for teams that you thought were trying to contend. And then when he landed on the Brewers, he landed in their lap, and I couldn't believe it. And then they brought back Mike Moustakas on another one-year deal. He's got like a mutual option in there.
And these are the kinds of deals that I think longtime Brewers fans have to still be kind of shaking their head in a I can't believe we're doing this sort of way. These are the kinds of deals that the Brewers never used to make.
No, and it started with last offseason with the biggest contract in team history to Lorenzo Cain. Yeah, those are things that just don't happen with Milwaukee. But they had their farm system set up enough where they were able to trade for Christian Yelich, and then they were able to sign Kane. And then this past offseason, they ended up walking away with Moustakas and Grandal anyway. And I still think they could have done more. Kimbrel was there. Dallas Keuchel is still out there, a starting pitcher. They ended up bringing Gio Gonzalez back because the Yankees didn't think he was, you know, good enough to be on their main roster. And he's been steady. And I thought they could have looked into bringing Wade Miley back for cheaper. But I don't think anyone expected all three of their young pitchers that they were going to rely on at the beginning of the season, Corbin Burns, Freddy Peralta, and Brandon Woodruff, to struggle so mightily. So
one has to imagine, though, that for the Brewers to still be within a game or two of first place in the NL Central actually speaks pretty highly of them, because this is a team that still could improve quite a bit over the second
half. They're still a good team. I don't want it to sound like I think they're a bad team. The Brewers are still fine. It's not going to be a runaway by any team in this division, even the Cubs, with as talented as they are. I know we tend to overreact, especially with baseball, because, you know, the good stretches, they last for a couple of weeks, and then it feels like the bad stretches last for a month. But there's going to be ups and downs in every sport season, but this season is 162 games long, so there's going to be considerably more.
All right, so let's shift briefly to basketball and do a quick postmortem on the Bucks season. This is a team, it's interesting, you talk about patience that fan bases have with their teams, and this is a team that was the best team. They were the class of the NBA over the course of the 82-game season.
Yes.
And really, they came within, you know, just spitting distance of making it to the NBA final. So by all accounts, Bucks fans should be pretty happy with how this season turned out. To read in the national media, though, everyone is saying, well, the Bucks really need to do some soul searching in this offseason. Where do you fall in this continuum? Do the Bucks have any major questions that they have to answer?
I think they have one or two, but I don't think I'd call them major questions. They have a lot of decisions they need to make regarding pending free agency. Brook Lopez, having him back would be wonderful, but a team is going to offer him way more money than he got this past season. They have to make a decision on Malcolm Brogdon, who is a restricted free agent. Someone is going to want to sign him to a near-max level contract. He does a little bit of everything. And they're going to have to decide, because I don't think they'll be able to re-sign everybody. And that's where the difficulty comes in.
They need another star? I mean, some of the pundits are saying, you know, they need another, you know, legitimate star to go along with Giannis.
I don't think so. I think even Malcolm Brogdon could be that star. And again, this is a team that won the most games out of anyone in the regular season. And they went up 2-0 on the Toronto Raptors, who won the second most games of anyone in the regular season. But people seem to forget that the Toronto Raptors, as we're currently seeing now, are really good. They're extremely good defensively, and it helped that in the Eastern Conference Finals, a lot of their players stepped up, a lot of them that you didn't expect, shot lights out. And in the Bucks' case, that didn't happen after Game 2. Everyone kind of forgot how to shoot. And yeah, you know, everyone was saying, oh, Giannis could have done a little bit more, which I'm going to laugh at, because he did everything right all season. You need a little bit of help in the playoffs, and they did an excellent job of slowing him down, though, especially after Game 2. No one else stepped up. Chris Middleton had a huge Game 4. They lost by 20 points. And Mirotić forgot how to shoot three-pointers. Yeah. He shot under 20% for the playoffs. Eric Bledsoe disappeared. Malcolm Brogdon was good, but
he'd been injured for the last couple of months.
Yeah. No one else stepped up. Brook Lopez had a big Game 1, disappeared after that. So I don't think they need another star, because their team was excellent this past season. Their bench was excellent this past season. And then they got to Game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals, and they all seemingly forgot how to play basketball as a team. Everything they had done together, they weren't doing after that. Maybe Mike Budenholzer was a little bit stubborn, and he should have made some adjustments, and he's notorious for not making adjustments in the playoffs, and that's basically the only criticism he gets. But I don't think there's a second star out there that they'll be able to afford without losing a couple of the guys that they have now. Brook Lopez could be gone. Middleton could be gone. Brogdon could be gone. Those are the decisions they have to make. I don't think they have to do any of this soul searching. I don't think the season was a failure, obviously. If you'd have told most Bucks fans, and especially most Bucks fans I know, at the beginning of the season or even at the end of last season that, hey, they're going to be two games away from the NBA Finals, what do you think the response would be? I'm pretty sure most would be very happy about it. And the only thing I'll add to that, though, is that it's really crummy how abruptly it ended. Again, they were out to a 2-0 lead, and you thought, oh, my goodness, this is happening. And then they lost four straight. They hadn't lost three straight all season. So to see them lose four straight, one of them being at home where they were almost unbeatable all season, it sucks. But it wasn't a failure of a season. They don't have to tear anything down. You know, they have a new arena. Everyone's excited about the new arena. Giannis is arguably the best player in basketball, or the potentially the best player in basketball. So they're going to be fine. They just have to make a decision between a couple of their guards and how much money they're willing to spend to keep them. Okay. If they lose them all, then there's a problem, but I don't think they're going to lose them all.
All right, so from a team that that definitely did not have a failure of a season to a team that, if it wasn't a failure of a season, it was a pretty close replica of one. The Packers, as we know, finished last year 6-9-1.
Yes.
And I don't know that there was anybody associated with that team that took anything positive out of that season. We're obviously well before full training camp gets underway here, but what's your thought about the way the Packers have been reshaping themselves in the offseason?
They almost can't be worse than the stretches they went through last season. The biggest thing, and this is becoming more and more of a question every season, is the health of Aaron Rodgers.
As opposed to the health of their new head coach.
As opposed to the health of Matt LaFleur, who tore his ACL in OTAs, because apparently that happens now. He likes to be very hands-on, so I guess he hurt himself during a drill. But yeah, Aaron Rodgers has been not 100% the last couple seasons, whether it's his shoulder and he plays through it, or he takes a month off and he comes back a little early, or last season with his knee in the first game of the season, and he wasn't 100% all year either, but you can't keep using that as an excuse. The Green Bay Packers have a pretty good team, and at the end of the day, they still have Aaron Rodgers. They should be better than 6-9-1. You expect him to be contending every single season. I don't think you can call them Super Bowl contenders every single season, but they should be battling for the division title every year until Rodgers, that is no longer there. It'll be interesting. You said anyone associated with the team probably couldn't take any positives. I agree with that. I know a handful of fans who were probably very happy to see Mike McCarthy go, but in the aftermath of that, you had a lot of he said reports of him and Aaron Rodgers never got along. Aaron Rodgers didn't think highly of Mike McCarthy, all of that. Hopefully none of that will be a distraction once preseason comes and they can just focus on playing.
And finally, the nice sounding thing that's coming out of the offseason is that it sounds like the Packers are going to sign Jordy Nelson to a 1-day contract to let him retire.
Yes,
and that's
a nice thing and a deserved thing. I know 1-day contracts happen all the time for that very reason. I know people were very upset when they released him and he went to the Raiders. I still maintain that was the right decision as a team to make. But yeah, it's going to be nice to see Jordy back. He is one of the, at least of my lifetime, one of the better receivers in Packers history.
A lot of people with 87 jerseys are going to be pleased.
Him and Aaron Rodgers had a great rapport. It was like Freeman and Favre, or anyone in Favre, when Favre was in his prime in Green Bay. Nothing but touchdowns. They loved each other. They understood each other. And I'm pretty sure Aaron Rodgers wishes he had another one like that. But yeah, seeing Jordy back in Green Bay and him getting that special moment, he deserves that moment. Green Bay fans deserve that moment too, so that'll be nice.
Sean Ranft, it's been great talking with you over the years. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back.
Sean Ranft is Lake Effect's regular sports contributor. You can hear Pat's conversations with him at WUWM.com.